Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's the IGN UK podcast.
That's such a crap start.
What an intro.
Oh god, I'm meant to not be working today, and then I stupidly off to do the podcast, and it turns out I've picked a very busy day, and everyone, no one else can do it, so here I am. I landed from LA like 15 hours ago, so
how are you feeling?
Tired, jet lagged, but just full to the brim with exciting gaming news, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Oh, it was a big week of announcements, wasn't it? I haven't slept much. Let's just keep going. Let's just talk about gaming. How are your weeks? Let me know. How are your weeks, Emma and Jesse? I'm Simon, by the way. This is good, isn't it?
Took us a little while to get an introduction. It's been absolutely fine. Not as busy as yours, but it's been nice watching all the announcements to have somewhat of a E3, not E3 week. Some shows better than others. Mm-hmm. Capcom. But yeah, overall pretty fun.
Yeah, it's an exciting time.
Yeah, it felt more like E3 than it has done for a few years, this one.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, not quite back to, I mean, we'll probably never quite sadly get back to what it was, but yeah, this week there was some good stuff and a lot of good games to talk about, I think, and some surprises, which we'll get to as well. We'll go briefly through some of those. Then we've got some games that people have actually played we can talk about, which is exciting, rather than just watch trailers of. And also maybe a little bit of film chat, because Emma, you've been talking to the director of the latest Transformers film, so we can drop that in as well. Isn't it just infinitely exciting? And do you know what looks infinitely exciting as well? Starfield.
Oh, it really does.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Like, I am not only delirious through lack of sleep, but I'm just, this game has made me delirious. Like, it's the game I've always dreamt of playing, and I'm not going to lie, the past year, I was getting slowly worried. It was still my most anticipated game. I couldn't wait to play it. Still can't wait to play it. Last time they showed it, it was like, I'm not quite sure this is what I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Had they showed much gameplay before they did the presentation? Because I can't really remember the timeline.
Was it last year or the year before? They had like a 10 to 15 minute like Starfield section, and they showed a bit of the gameplay, and the gunplay didn't look fantastic.
Yeah, that's what I remember.
And they didn't really show off, I think, what the crux of the game was. Whereas this time, we got a big old 45-minute Starfield Direct. And let me tell you, I've already watched this three times. it is the game I wanted it to be. And I'm so, you know, it's not come out yet. And who's to say it's going to run smooth when it comes out and all of that. But at the moment, it looks like it's exactly the game I dreamt it would be. Mm. And I just want to build my own ships. Just looking at that alone, I was like, it looks like No Man's Sky. And I've always enjoyed No Man's Sky, and I only think it's gotten better and better as it's actually been developed over time. But yeah. It looks like No Man's Sky with a whole Bethesda RPG built on top of it. And I can't believe it's real, frankly. And Yeah.
It's only like 80 days away, which is insane.
I'm scared. It's going to take over my life. But yeah, like, are you guys as excited as me? Can anyone be as excited about this than me? I don't know.
Before that presentation started, I hadn't really been thinking about Starfield at all, because that last presentation you mentioned when they showed a little bit of the gunplay, I was like, it just looks not as great as... Because Fallout 4's combat was the sort of like turning point for Bethesda, like first person shooters, I guess. They sort of improved it over, you know, what you could do in Fallout 3 and stuff like that. But I wasn't impressed then. And then watching this presentation, I was blown away, because like you, this has been a game. This is the type of game I've been waiting for near enough since I was a kid. Because when I was a kid, I had like a little trial disc for Star Wars Galaxies. And that was like, wow, an open world Star Wars adventure that I can play on my computer and it's amazing. And I can like... own my own spaceship and, you know, fly around different planets. And then that died. And then in 2012, like what, Squadron 42 and Star Citizen was announced. That's still being developed and nowhere near close to completion. And then Starfield, all the advancements that have come from previous Bethesda games with current gen hardware. And it's just an epic cinematic space adventure. And it's open, open planet, open
universe,
system. Yeah,
open
universe.
Over 1,000 planets.
Yeah, like it's... It is exactly the kind of game I want, and the presentation cemented that, because there's so many little different things. Even like you said, you know, being able to build your own spaceship, assigning crew to that spaceship and getting your companions on board, like whether you want to have a little cargo hauler or, you know, like a big attack fighter and stuff, like you can, it seems like you can make those choices, and that's all I've ever wanted from a space game.
Yeah, I love how it's kind of based much more in, although it's obviously a sci-fi game, based much more in our sort of, you know, it's looking back at the space race and NASA and all of that as much as it is looking at like far-flung fantasy stuff. Like, I like how all the ships and the uniforms and the cities like look modern, but also look like kind of like lo-fi space.
Yeah,
that's why I'm just into that aesthetic so much.
It looks more closer to like something I would expect the people in Alien would wear, or Aliens and stuff. It's like, it's still sci-fi, but a little bit bulky and a little bit realistic. Not like, you know, slim fitting Marvel CGI nanosuits that have just like, it's not a fan of anymore.
Suit.
Yeah, because like I want to be able to see all like, you know, the wires and the breathing spaces and all that other stuff. I want to just see the bulk of space. Yeah. And it seems like this game's going to provide that.
Like, it looks like so excitingly new, but at the same time, like so kind of like comfortingly familiar to me as well. Like, it feels like a Skyrim or a Fallout, the way everyone was speaking, and like I'm just so glad it still like seems to have plenty of that humor that like Fallout and Skyrim do, like, and some of like the perks, like that was it the adoring fan who will just follow you around the
whole
exactly. time.
Even being able to have like what, choosing one of the little perks or character quirks where you have a family, you can go back to your mum and dad and they're just super proud of you and just want to see how you're getting on.
That's
stuff.
So sweet. Yeah.
I want that one. I need that reinforcement in my life. And
I'm
a jetpack.
Surprised.
I'd like a jetpack. Parents and a jetpack. That's
the
all
jetpack
I really
looks
need.
Cool. They're like, what do they call it? Like a boost pack or something. When they were using that in the combat, it looked so fun to just like zoom around and like shoot. I'm just so surprised that they showed so much of it in one go. I don't think I was expecting like 45 minutes or however long it was, but I'm all in. It looks amazing. It looks incredible.
Only, like you said, Jesse, like 3 months away now, roughly.
Yeah, and it's just crazy because like you sort of got, you look at No Man's Sky and how it launched and the state it was in and how it's just progressively turned into, you know, this wonderful experience with so many different like little expansions and updates and stuff. And then to have all of those additions, which is like, wow, those are cool things that they've added to No Man's Sky. And now, like, I guess it's not really fair to compare what is probably a 15-person team on No Man's Sky, you know, to the, like, monolith, which is Bethesda. But to finally have just, I wouldn't say this is a dream game of mine, but, like, this is something I've been wanting to play since I was a kid. And it actually looks fun as well, which is the main thing, because I think back at Bethesda games, you know, like, if you just being able to transition from first person to third person and the way the weapons look like they handle, the animations associated with that, it looks good. And I feel like they must have learned a lot from id on Doom and stuff like that, bringing that over to Starfield.
I think they have had conversations with them, about gunplay. It's obviously not going to be Doom's gunplay, but, you know, they've had words with them, I think, on, like, pacing and enemy encounters specifically. But like, we had a big interview with Todd Howard that Ryan McCaffrey did at, in LA, and Todd Howard said some like words that were just the most music to my ears you've ever heard. He was like, I can read a quote here. He said, I think the flow of Starfield probably has more of a feeling of Red Dead 2. It's more like living the Western fantasy in space. I'm just like, oh my God.
That like, is perfect for you.
I was just like what, I can't wait.
I think the only sort of reservation I have, and it's the same sort of thing you like everyone got like really excited about with No Man's Sky, is that when you pull that map back and there's, you know, 100 planets here and 200 planets there and stuff. Like, I know some of it is procedurally generated with hand-picked content inside it, but is it really going to be that I'll scan, you know, I might scan one planet and it'll be like, oh, there's a 5 resources there. I'll get those resources, leave, never go back to that planet again. Yeah. Or there might be a little outpost here, but it's just like one outpost next to a bunch of other planets that just have resources. Like, I think that's the main thing I'm hung up on. Obviously, you're going to have those big, like, handcrafted planets where you're the major cities and stuff like that. But how is that really going to transfer over to those 1,000 planets?
I think you said, like, a small fraction of those 1,000, the main story will lead you towards. Then there'll be side quests on some. But yeah, some of them will just be, like, there'll be some cool aliens. There might be, I don't know, some camps to take out or just some, like, resources. You know, the main story is not going to tell you, take you everywhere. But I suppose there's always, Bethesda have always done expansions for their games as well. Like,
yeah,
they can
course.
Just introduce new stuff. Like, I just,
and to
I'm
be
struggling.
Fair, like,
it can only let me down at this point because in my head I've built up so much. But I now have more confidence in it than ever. Like, I wanted to watch this 45 minutes at the start of it, and like, I was praying, like, just don't let me be any less excited than I am. And I came away somehow, like, even more excited for this game.
Yeah, I had zero expectations going in, and now I am excited for sure. But I'm just waiting to see what it's like. And also, when it comes to any Bethesda game, like you said, there's always going to be quite a few expansions. And if they have that modding capability that all the previous Bethesda games had, there's going to be someone who's like, I've created an entire planet worth of mods for you to just experience, and this is my creation. Like, I think that's quite understated how the potential for this game to grow, especially since, you know, you can, you know, set your home base among the stars and stuff like that. You can have like, oh, I want to have a research station here. I want to have a mining station here. Like, it sounds too good to be true. I'm getting into the mindset of how I felt when I saw Star Citizen for the first time. But this seems like,
you've still never played it.
I know, but this seems like this is really, really going to happen. And I've played Star Citizen and it's cool for what it is, but it's not giving me what I want. And no, Starfield looks like it will.
That's what I mean. Sorry, you've never played it in the way that, you know, you dreamt you would.
Yeah, exactly. But Starfield is like, it's hitting all those notes for me. And I'm excited.
Yep. Can't wait for that game at this point. Can only be let down. But God, am I going to enjoy the 80-day run up to this game. A slight surprise. I mean, we knew Ubisoft was working on a Star Wars game. No one knew what it was. Apart, I think the only details they'd ever given away was an open-world Star Wars game. And so they announced Star Wars Outlaws, and let me tell you, another game that is seemingly heavily inspired by Red Dead Redemption, but Star Wars. I mean, games are just being made for me at the moment, and I just, I couldn't be happier. Do you guys, I haven't actually had a chance to speak to it, anyone really from the UK team about these games. I know everyone in the US, and me particularly, like, was very excited by it, especially when they revealed the gameplay of this. Like, are you guys excited for this?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, I watched the gameplay and it looks really fun. I think the story as well should be pretty interesting because isn't this set between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi? I think so I've liked what I've seen of it so far. I think the gunplay looks interesting. I like the choices system they've got in there. They had like a bribe or no bribe. Like, it's ticking all the boxes for me so far. It looks pretty cool.
I liked it. It seemed to be a cool little combo of like almost like Uncharted like shooting, like a bit of Watch Dogs with your companion, a little bit of that going on, and then also like a little bit of GTA / Red Dead in like the wanted system and just the open world nature of it. And I think everyone had that moment of like when they got in the ship, it was like, are we really just gonna take off and go? And like, that is the one thing that at the moment Star Wars Outlaws seems to have on Starfield. Like, when you take off on planets in Starfield, it's cutscenes, whereas this, you take off and you just fly through and then into hyperspace. And yeah, it's just, again, I think this is like, I don't want to put words in people's mouths. Like, this is kind of the Star Wars game everyone has always wanted. The open, there has never been an open world Star Wars game before, which seems mad when you think about it.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I think for me, I was drawing comparisons to Jedi Survivor, because that's, you know, that's like semi open world in terms of the levels and stuff,
hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I still feel in my head that I've got that little bit of like Ubisoft burnout in terms of, you know, that sort of like open world games and Star Wars. I feel like most of the games coming out are now taking place in that very narrow time slot between 3 and 4. And I feel like I've seen a lot of that now. Like, do I want something different? I'm not too sure, but watching that
going between 2 and 3 now, so it's slightly different.
Yeah, but watching the gameplay, I was like, this, I mean, yeah, it looks fun. It is that sort of, and I said, I'm going to say it again, like a sort of dream Star Wars game scenario, like open world, and you're dealing with like the rough and gritty part of Star Wars, which is, you know, like crime lords and like having to deal with bounties and smuggling. Yeah, like it looks fun, but yeah. I don't know how I feel about it.
You can be wary. I was just hoping, because I feel like I enjoyed Survivor a lot, and I feel like they kind of nailed the lightsaber combat. That's as good as we've ever had it, or at least in a long time. And I was just so glad to not see one single lightsaber. But I'm not stupid. I know that we weren't about to go a whole Star Wars game without throwing in a lightsaber.
It's coming,
But like, I just want this game to be like, you know, I don't know, an open world game where you're taking some missions from people like Jabba, and you're just kind of hiding from the Empire, and I don't know. I'm just very excited.
I feel like I don't want to entirely see like, oh, and Darth Vader's right at the end of the game waiting for you and stuff, because we
can't do that every time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, thinking back to like previous Star Wars games, like whether it's the Outcast series, you are being introduced to like new villains. It's not always like, you remember this guy and you remember that guy. Like, I want to see like this disgusting underbelly of Star Wars.
I think they did confirm, like, in the game, like, there was a little bit, like, I think Han Solo makes a tiny little cameo.
of course.
And I'm pretty sure I saw Bosk, or at least the race of alien that Bosk is. But yeah, I want to see those guys. I don't need to see Vader and Luke. And you know what? This game, it would make sense if Boba Fett was there. I don't need to see him, but it makes sense at least that you would bump into him.
It makes that universe feel so small. I think that's why I'm excited about Starfield, because everything is new about it. But when it comes to Star Wars, it's like, I can recognize that specific speeder. I can recognize that specific race or that specific character from the Legends or whatever. It's just like, new Star Wars is more exciting than reference. Constantly. Yeah. But in terms of like blaster combat, it does look pretty fun. Like you said, you know, the sort of Jedi Survivor series, like they've sort of nailed down that combat now. And now I want to see what Massive can do with, you know, that's just sort of like blaster, like up close and rough combat.
Yeah. Well, Massive by name, Massive by nature, because they're not only making a Star Wars game, they're making an Avatar game too.
This does seem insane. I don't know how large that studio is, but...
Yeah, they must have two. I mean, what, Avatar's out in December. That Star Wars game, you'd think at least a year away.
Yeah. I think it's 2024,
I wouldn't be surprised if that's a couple of years away. What do you think of Avatar? Because it does seem like very much like Far Cry, but you're not encouraged to kill all the wildlife.
I think I'm less excited about that, because it looks like, you know, it has crafting. It has even cooking. You're gathering your resources.
Awa, the tree.
Yeah. But like, it looks like you're invading camps as well, and you've got your skill trees. Like, it does. I know everyone's going to be making this comparison, but it really looks like Far Cry Avatar. Mm. And I don't know if the world of Avatar is a massive draw. Like, I do love that sort of sci-fi, foresty kind of...
people must like it, because these films make $1 billion every time.
Yeah,
like,
I know, but...
it's so pretty.
It is so pretty. Like, that's what it has going for it. It's not like, you know, grimy fucking sci-fi. Yeah. It's like beautiful nature sci-fi, but I don't know how well that's going to hold up in terms of... how much do I really care about the Na'vi and their story? I don't know.
I'm a sucker for a bow and arrow, and you can, like... you can jump and roam pretty quick. I like the dragon. You know, that is something that's different to Far Cry. You can't, well, I suppose you can use a helicopter.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can't fly around a dragon and, you know, like, stand on it and use a bow and arrow. Like, there are some cool looking things in there, but I'm kind of with you. I think it's just like, I'm burnt out on Far Cry. Like, I don't need a Far Cry anytime soon. And this, you know, if you're being reductive, it is Far Cry, really, when you look at it, and the way they've structured it, you're basically taking out human camps and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. Emery, are you excited by this one?
Kind of. Again, like, I don't know if I need another Far Cry in my life, but saying that, with Far Cry 4 specifically, the time I had in that game was when I was just, like, going around, going to different, like, towers and hunting animals. So, like, this very much looks like that, and I'm kind of into
that. They don't want you
that.
To hunt the animals. You're meant to look after the world of Pandora. Right, well,
okay, instead of hunting, then looking after. But still, you know, still probably crossing. Tracking them and, like, probably helping them out, right? Yeah, that side of it looks really cool, I think. And yeah, like, again, I think people do like the world of Avatar, and they do like this really bright, vibrant, like, and I'm sure we'll see parts of the world that we haven't seen in the films
as well.
It's
a whole new era of Pandora, and I'm just like, if it is a pretty game and it plays well, it's out in December, like, if it's fun, I can see myself, you know, it's two-player co-op online, which is the one thing that maybe could be a draw for me.
Three-player, or am I thinking of another? Oh, wait, that's Space Marine, I think.
Yeah, that's three-player, yeah. But yeah, I could play a bit of Avatar in co-op and just clean out all the humans from Pandora, maybe. They did, the one question I had was, there's a clip in the gameplay where they rip out a human out of their big, like, loader mechs. It's like, can I then jump in and take that over? Because I think the Na'vi, they're like 10 foot tall or something. They're too big for them, I think that's the problem. But yeah, let me get in their mech. Yeah.
Did we even really see any, like, small human characters fighting the mech? I feel like I only really saw him, like, fighting mechs and other machinery. I didn't really...
There were human, yeah, there were shooting humans, I think.
Because I just wonder if it's going to play more like Titanfall, where you've got the little, like, fodder enemies, and you are essentially a mech yourself, primarily fighting other mechs, and... Because then that would...
It looks fun. It looks fun enough. But yeah, I'm not as excited.
It's more of a co-op experience. I don't think I'll be able to put 20 hours into it by myself.
No. But yeah, still, you know, by no means looks bad. Do you know what looks absolutely brilliant, though? Alan Wake 2. I know people have been talking about this one for a while, but I just wanted to elaborate a little, because I was lucky enough to see a full 30-minute gameplay demo of this while I was out in LA. And it was a larger section of, like, the 2 or 3 minutes they showed last week. And I couldn't be more excited for this game as well. I'm feasting at the moment on games that are looking like they're right up my alley. And I'm a big Alan Wake fan in the first place, like Remedy. Maybe my, like, if you push me to say who's my favourite developer, I'd maybe pick Remedy. This is just, it's Resident Evil with True Detective. It really is that, like, from what I saw. Like, it's, they've learned the lessons from the first one. It's not like waves of enemies coming at you. It's very much the Resident Evil, like, one or two will pop up, deal with them at a time. Kind of take your time, slower combat, like, enemies take a good 10 to 12 shots to take down after you've obviously exposed their weakness with the flashlight, not a torch, because I kept saying torch last week and Americans were just like, what's a torch? But there you go.
Really?
But also I saw a lot more of, like, the detective side of it, where you go into the mind palace of Saga, the new character, and you can kind of look around this board and, like, piece information together, which unlocks new objectives and side objectives within the levels. And I just love that side of it more. Like, I'm not the world's biggest survival horror fan, so that side of the gameplay, I'm like, I'll play it, I'll get through it. But it's the detective stuff that I'm really into. Like, more detective games, please. Like, there is a little bit more of, like, there's a little bit of the yellow noir in there, but then there is also a lot of the Resident Evil. Like, there was just this padlock in the room which had a number combination. You had to go find what the number combination for it was and stuff like that. But I just, again, I can't wait. And there's definitely some control in there as well, in not only, like, the damage system and the gunplay seems quite similar, but also go into this weird, like, limbo area which is in between the real world and this, like, what do they call it? Is it the dark place? Am I just getting Garth Marenghi in there? I don't know. The place where basically Alan Wake has been missing, which is this weird alternate creepy world. And it looks like, I know, I think Remedy have already said this, like, I spoke to some of their teams, they're fully confident this is the best looking PS5 game yet. And when I was watching it, I couldn't really deny that. Like, the lighting in this game is stunning. Like, and yeah. Be very excited for Alan Wake 2. Like, September, October is absolutely mad at the moment.
Yeah. I think I was... I was quite excited before I had watched that gameplay reveal, but I think it's because, what's the character's name? Saga?
Saga, yeah.
Yeah, you just sort of see her walking through a building and then she gets ambushed by a single enemy. And I think that just like, just all of those sort of moments, like out of context when I'm watching it, just didn't seem like, I want to know more what's going on. Obviously, you saw an extended piece. Yeah. Like, how important are those detective sections? Yeah. Like, what are you actually getting up to?
Because the whole point is you're in this, you play as Saga, as an FBI agent who's come to Bright Falls to investigate these cultist killings that have happened, which is the very, like, in the deer imagery especially, is very true detective. And yeah, like, you're there basically, and you stumble across these pages. So I saw, this was from the second mission of the game, the gameplay they showed us.
Okay.
And you can play them in any, not any order, but you can play the Alan Wake and Saga stories in any order. You can switch between them as you go, which is very an interesting thing they're doing. But basically, yeah, you find these pages that you find are essentially written about you, and it's Alan Wake writing your story, which is different to how Alan Wake was basically writing his story in the first one. And yeah, it's all kind of linking in between. You're not quite sure what's real, what's fiction, what's being made up by him, what's actually happening. Like, it seems very, it's just very mysterious. And like, you never quite know what's going on in Remedy's games. Like, Control, like, if anything, like, I love that game, but if anything let it down, it is the ending. It's not the strongest ending to that story, but the whole mystery building up and atmosphere of it is present in Alan Wake 2. And yeah, I really can't wait to play that game. So, yeah, we are feasting, let me tell you that. Let's go through a couple more of the announcements before we move on to some other things, some big ones. We can't cover them all because I think there was some absurd, like, 490 games shown and revealed the past week. So, yeah, we don't have time. We've got a couple more. Let's just briefly talk about Fable because we had a first good real look at it in a long time. And this was all in-engine. We saw big Richard Ayoade popping up.
Yep.
Always good to see him. Literally big. He was a giant in the trailer. And then we saw like a little glimpse of combat, which seems different from old-school Fable. It seemed like it might be more of like a third-person action game than the original. But do you know, we got a sense of the tone. I was just so glad to see that this is still a thoroughly British game.
Yes.
Like, and the comedy's still there and they're still riffing on all the fairy tales. I was worried it would lose a little bit of its charm, but it felt like, you know, never doubt Playground. I know they've known for Forza Horizon, but and this is new ground for them. But yeah, I'm just, again, we haven't really seen much of this, but I'm just glad that it seems like it's on the right path.
Yeah, it was like a very quick look at it, but yeah, feel positive about it so far. Like, definitely interested to learn more. Do we know when it's coming out?
I don't think we have any idea. I wouldn't be surprised if this is still a couple of years away. But yeah, it was good to see it again because it had been a little while. Yeah, Xbox's show in general I thought was just very strong.
Yeah, and
it was really good. Yeah,
like, they really needed that after the Redfall debacle. So and I mean, this is more of a personal pick. You know, it wasn't the biggest announcement of their show, but when they started showing the Sea of Thieves footage, I was like, oh, you know, this music is very Monkey Island. And then 3 seconds later, I was like, that is the Monkey Island music. And then they showed Sea of Thieves, The Legend of Monkey Island, which, by the sounds of it, is like the first Monkey Island game in Sea of Thieves, but like, kind of reimagined. Like, it's a single player adventure where they bring some of the puzzles from Secret of Monkey Island into Sea of Thieves, and then I assume add combat, and it has a fully explorable Melee Island and Monkey Island, like all the voice cast, like, and Murray added as well. Love Murray the skull. Yeah, I'm just like, this is like what I wanted as a kid again. Like, all my dreams come true. I was like, I've got like a first person 3D playable Monkey Island. What's going on?
Yeah, yeah, it seems like a really good fit for Sea of Thieves. Like, Sea of Thieves does a lot of these kind of like DLCs and extra, you know, bits where it branches into other stuff. But yeah, with this one specifically, it feels like they just merge really well together.
Yeah, I was just watching all of this Xbox and these Ubisoft shows going like, a game's just being made for me here. Like, what's happening? Yeah, if you're a Monkey Island fan, you know, get your eyes on Sea of Thieves, because if you have Game Pass, it'll be all free, I believe. And it's like three chapters coming some point soon. that's it for the announcements, because, you know, we'll dig more into those games when I actually get to play them or whenever they actually come out. But you guys, you had a little nice little trip to Paris to play some games. How was that?
We did. It was good. We got to see RoboCop Rogue City, which
is surprisingly good, I've heard.
It's pretty good. I have, like, some reservations about it as well, but it does look pretty cool. We got to play, like, the opening sort of hour and a half, 2 hours. So it's a first-person shooter with, like, some RPG elements, and it's set between the second and third RoboCop movie. So you've already got RoboCop's established. He is
the
RoboCop.
The second and the third. That's an interesting choice.
Yeah, it is an interesting choice. But yeah, so you're playing as RoboCop, and it's the opening is so full of, like, references from the films. So I, like, watched the films recently, right? I just watched 1 and 2, which seem perfect now coming into this game. It's set right after 2. And yeah, it's even got characters, like, it's got, like, your police, like, partner, Agent Aunt Lewis. It's got a bunch of other characters from the movies, and it's, like, it really has nailed, like, the humor and the feel of RoboCop. Nice. Like, you know, it opens literally with one of those, like, satirical news segments. And then you're straight in where you're trying to, like, track down this gang who are tied to the drug from RoboCop 2, Nuke. Immediately you're right into it. It feels very RoboCop. One thing that's, I guess, people might be expecting, but it also does feel kind of strange, is that, so it is an FPS, but you're playing as a really, really slow character. Like, RoboCop is really slow. Like, he's unstoppable. You definitely feel that way in this intro. He's, like, super tanky. He can literally go into a room and just clear it. It was actually really weird, because in most FPSs, you're agile, you're ducking behind cover. You don't have to do that in this game at all. And it feels so strange when you first start playing. You can literally walk into a room of enemies, have them shooting at you from all angles, and you're just tanky enough and you've got enough health that you can just stroll right up to someone, just punch them in the head, grab, like, a CRT monitor, throw that at someone. Like, that takes some getting used to.
Did it feel like a challenge? Was that fun? Like,
it's so immediately you're like, yeah, I feel really good. I'm really powerful. No one can stop me. And then once you've had a few of those interactions, it's kind of like, okay, so where is the challenge exactly? Like, that's the thing I'm sort of kind of unsure about. Like, I played on normal difficulty. Maybe it's, like, much harder if you pick, you know, one of the harder difficulties. But from what I saw, there was no enemy that you came up against that really gave you any trouble. I think in the trailer and stuff, they've shown, like, you do come up against some of those, like, big, like, robots and stuff.
And some enemies do have, like, will have, like, heavy mounted machine guns that'll fire at you, and then you might have to think differently. But like Emma said, it puts you right into it. Like, at the start, you're basically head first into this news network building that's been taken over by a gang, and the RoboCop theme is blaring in your ears, and, like, people are attacking you, and you've got your, you know, the Auto 9 targeting pistol, and you're blasting through people. And in terms of, like, FPS action and what that looks like in the game, it looks good and it plays well. Like, the violence on display is fitting of RoboCop. Because, like, you'll blast someone and their brains will be, like, splattered on the wall and, like, slowly drip down. Like, it's grim and nasty, and it feels like, yeah, that's probably what nasty Detroit would look like in Unreal Engine 5 during the RoboCop era. But again, it's like me and Emma were speaking about after we played. It was like, how is that going to compare 5 hours in or 10 hours in? Will you have to, you know, automatically just play on a harder difficulty just to adjust, because you felt so tanky? There's times where you can just stand in the middle of the room and just easily pick up your targets and blast them away. But that's just with human enemies. There's some other variations where, you know, you're usually going for headshots, but sometimes someone might be wearing, like, a metal mask, and then, you know, like, the headshot will, like, or your bullets rather would, like, ping right off their head, so you have to target different body parts. But that's not so much of a difficult tactical choice, really. So I don't know what non-human enemies there really are going to be. Mm-hmm. For what's going to be, what was it, a 20 or 30 hour long game, I think.
Wow, that's
yeah. So I think it's 20 hours if you just stick to main story and stuff, 30 if you do all the side quests. But you're not just, like, obviously as RoboCop, you are going in as this action hero, delivering justice by any means. But you get up to a lot of other stuff as well. So like, we got to see some of the side quests, which was... You know, I think one of them, I went into the police station and I had to like open up a queue for all these people that were coming in to complain about crimes and stuff. And like literally just spent a few minutes like dealing with their inquiries. and like this is kind of where like more of the skills come in. So like obviously as RoboCop, you've got, you know, like all these, you've got a pistol that has infinite ammo, which feels
helpful,
really yeah. like overpowered to begin with. You can pick up other weapons, but you're not gonna like stick with those. You drop them basically at the end of the level. But yeah, the other skills that you have sort of play into like more of a RoboCop that we haven't seen before. So it's not just the action side, you're also like choices you make in the game are gonna affect the ending. And they also affect, like, as you're going, sort of how the public feel about you. So,
yeah.
You know,
it's apparently surprisingly deep. Because in my head, I was imagining this would be, like, a 6 hour almost on-rail shooter, like, in yeah. narrow levels. Like, I think the thing that actually got me interested from your preview, Emma, which has done already over 1 million views, so
congrats.
Well done on
big
that,
numbers.
Is almost like... I wasn't expecting, again, like another game that's bringing in almost L.A. Noire aspects into this.
Yeah.
Like, you do actual detective work. It's not just mindless shooting. Am I right in that?
Yeah, exactly. So you do get chances to walk around the city and you can sort of, crimes might be happening as you're walking past, or you might overhear someone talking. And there's lots of like police dotted around as well. And they'll be like, oh, you know, Robo, can you come help me with this? And so you're going around like scanning stuff. I think like we showed in the preview, there's like, it's kind of more, yeah, like a Detroit Become Human crime scene where you're sort of mm-hmm. looking for specific clues and picking those
Detroit
out.
Detroit Become Robot.
Yeah, mm. there you go. But that was pretty cool. And yeah, again, like depending on how you upgrade your skills as well, like you might be able to get more from those scenes. So if you've put like points into, I think it's deduction, then you might get more information from scanning something, and then yeah. maybe you'll get like a safe combination. And then if one of your other skills is high enough, you can open a safe and get some more evidence. Like there's lots of stuff like strewn around that you can scan and get more information on bits and pieces. And depending on your kind of like how you're choosing to build RoboCop, you might get more out of that, or you might be able to sort of avoid violence in some cases. It won't be in every situation, because sometimes you will just have to go in all guns blazing. But yeah, there are like, you, I think if you level up your like psychology branch enough, you can kind of predict the outcome of certain dialogue choices and then kind of decide like, oh, do I want to really pick a fight with this person, or can I kind of pressure them to give me information in a different mm-hmm. way?
Yeah,
it just sounds like it could be good.
Just don't go expecting like Deus Ex level, you know, variation in terms of like, RoboCop can't even crouch. He can walk a little bit faster in this game, which counts as a sprint.
Can he jump?
No, I don't remember jumping. He can't.
I don't think he can jump. No, yeah, he can move slightly faster, and there is like a dash ability that he can kind of like knock into people and knock them over.
Okay. And I mean, it's a different take, at least, you know. It's, you know, every shooter seems to be like chasing that like Doom or Titanfall like speed and movement.
Yeah,
this is going the complete opposite direction, just slowing it down.
It is very, very nice. Different, but yeah, it's interesting, and it's coming out in September.
Yeah. Oh, good. Another game for September. Good. I'll
have time for that. Very busy Fantastic. Time.
Jesus. Right. And you saw a couple other games out there, right?
We did. So Jesse and I got to play a co-op game called Gangs of Sherwood. So it's like, I think it's up to 4 players. And what's kind of interesting
about, I wonder, Gangs of Sherwood. What gang could possibly live in Sherwood?
Well, exactly. That's the interesting part, right? So you play as one of the Merry Men from Robin Hood.
Can you play as Friar Tuck?
Yes.
You can. I think Jesse did, didn't
you? Oh, yeah,
yes.
I mained Tuck, Big and he was pretty good, to be fair. Actually, you know
You're
what?
You're a Tuck main.
I would say he's overpowered. actually.
Overpowered monk, interesting.
Yeah. Incredibly strong. Yeah, I played as Robin. So I think we got to play a couple of levels. So we sort of saw it like as it starts out where you're sort of, you're fighting off the Sheriff of Nottingham's like gang as well. And yeah, you sort of work your way through a level and you take on enemies. We worked our way up to a boss even. And it's kind of got this like Devil May Cry style of like scoring as like how you're doing with your combos and stuff as you go. And yeah, you sort of, you complete a level, then you go back to a hub and then you're unlocking like more abilities and things like that that are going to make you more powerful.
Is it like a story game or is it like map based? Like what kind of?
So you've got a central hub that you can sort of like, you know, speak to different vendors in, but then you will choose a specific mission. And it's almost like Vermintide-esque where you'll choose a mission and then you'll obviously head to that location.
So it's PV, it's not PvP?
No, not that. Okay. I mean, there might end up being a PvP mode, but it is just like you and three other mates are doing specific missions on specific maps, and usually there's a boss by the end of it. But I guess the main sort of like interesting thing about this is that it's not, you know, a entirely fantasy-esque looking game. It's more, how do you describe it, like steampunky and stuff, like,
yeah, it's like
hood punk.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Robin Hood but futuristic Robin Hood.
Yeah, it's, like, what? The Sheriff of Nottingham has like a massive artillery cannon that you need of to course. Take down, but then there's also, you know, like magic involved as well, and there's like automatons and all these other things. It's not just like you're fucking up a bunch of like old British blokes.
Seems quite odd. I mean, can you just give me a quick rundown of Friar Tuck's loadout? What's he packing?
From what I remember, he's got like a massive Morning Star kind of mace thing, but he's got a really, really just right click combo where you sort of like smash the mace into the ground and it sort of like exudes this circle of light. But I mean, Emma saw me playing it because we're playing it together, and I was just smashing enemies like every Tucking other second. Him. Yeah. Yeah. Tuck is very, very overpowered, but obviously you're going to play into sort of different strengths where obviously Robin is, you know, he's ranged, he's got a bow and stuff. Tuck is like the sort of tanky guy, and then the two other guys whose names I can't.
Little John and probably Marion, right? Is she playable?
Yes, I think she's got sort of like this sword whip ability.
Have you not got your Robin Hood lore locked down?
No, honestly, I don't. Unless it's the old Disney film where he's a fox. I love that.
Yeah.
What's Little John doing?
We only got to play as two characters. Mm.
He's sort of like this posho twat with, I think, that's what I remember. He's sort of like a disgraced like royal officer or something like that. It was mad. But yeah, they each have their own like distinct fighting styles, and they all have a bunch of, I guess, unique character abilities where there's different branches within the skill tree that like, oh, I know that I'm coming up against this boss. I've already faced him. I'm having a bit of difficulty. Maybe I want to switch out Friar Tuck's like close up range special for something a bit more, or rather close up attack for a bit more of like a ranged solution.
I never thought
and stuff.
I'd hear anyone say,
yeah, I know, describing Tuck's loadout.
What's going on?
But it was fun. It was fun. Like it obviously,
that wasn't said with the most confidence.
No, it's something where it's like you can tell it needs a bit more polish. And obviously we're playing something that isn't going to be out in another 4 or 5 months.
Okay. I think it's coming out in October. Yeah.
But I feel like once they just nail a few of those like tiny little bugs, because there were a few, obviously, you know, we're playing an early alpha build or whatnot. I think if you just had three mates and, you know, you wanted a main Tuck, then you can have some fun.
Yeah. I am intrigued by the Tuck action.
It works, like, it was just us two playing, but I feel like our attacks as we got further into the game where we could sort of unlock more of the different abilities and stuff as well, like, you can kind of work together way more. Mm. Yeah, so, like, you had an ability where you'd, like, slam down on the floor, which would push all the enemies up into the air, and then I could sort of dash in and do a jump and then hit them with my arrows. Like, it does get, once you get into the swing of it and you kind of do start using your abilities to complement each other, it does work pretty well.
Well, I'll see. Like, I'm not gonna be honest, I probably have never played this game, but I'm just glad that Tuck's getting a bit of a, you know, the spotlight.
He's a good man, a good overpowered man.
Yeah, which fictional monk would you like to play as in a video game? IGN underscore UK feedback at IGN.com.
What a question.
Is that the most Alan Partridge thing I've ever done on this podcast?
I mean, what are famous fictional monks? You could say a Jedi monk.
The detective. Let me see. What other famous fictional monks are there?
I feel like Tuck is the one, isn't he? Yeah.
Tuck is probably the big one. I mean, technically, aren't Jedi's monks?
I mean, that's what I said. So.
Yeah.
But I think we can move on. Monk.
I mean, this is where we really needed Matt or Wes on, because aren't Space Marines technically monks?
I think in 40K you do have like monk-esque characters, but
yeah, maybe not the Space Marines themselves. But I don't know. Like, he's not fictional by any means. But my boy Rasputin, what a monk!
Your boy,
what a mad monk! Yeah.
So seeing allegiance with Rasputin.
I've got that 900-page Rasputin biography on my shelf. I've read the first 30 pages. Need to get back to that. That was a leaving present for my old job. It was a 900-page.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you didn't really get around to finishing it then.
I don't even think he'd made it to St. Petersburg yet. Anyway.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, you played one more game, right, out in Paris. Give us a quick little chat about, is it Ad Infinitum? Why don't you say it?
Ad Infinitum.
There we go.
But you were nearly there. That's what he's going to do it. Yeah. So this is like a psychological horror game. It's set in World War One, and you play as a German soldier who's sort of dealing with like PTSD.
God, this sounds grim.
It's quite different from Gangs of Sherwood.
No Tuck.
Yeah, there's no Tuck in this one. I think when we were just before we started playing, the developers were like, the whole point of this is like, we're just throwing you into the game. It's very like surreal. And the whole point is that you don't really know what's going on from the beginning. You're sort of, you start straight off in like the trenches. you're running to or from something, and you're just supposed to feel like very scared and disoriented the whole
perfect
time.
Preview conditions, though.
Yeah, yeah. But like, I think the whole point is that you, as a character, you're like, you've forgotten who you are, or you're not sure what's happened to you, and then you're sort of trying to work out like what has happened to me, what's going on. So you go from the trenches, suddenly you just find yourself in this like creepy old house, and you're walking around, and there's like some puzzles to solve. There's a lot of like pages and stuff that you find just strewn around the house, which I think you're supposed to slowly start to piece like your own story together of like, okay, yeah, something's definitely happened with my family. There's been some kind of drama. I'm also suffering from the effects of war.
It's not a good time.
It was very scary. Because like it's that whole thing as well of like you're in this creaky old house, and like every sort of corner you go around, it's like, oh, did I see something out the corner of my eye? You end up collecting stuff to like a seance as well. So I was constantly worried like, is something going to jump out at me, like scary pop up. But
it's a slow game.
It's very slow to begin with. I think we got just far enough to sort of see they've got these weird sort of creatures in it that you're really supposed to be scared of. Everything's like very blurry when you see them, so you don't get like a full picture of what they actually look like. But okay, at one point I walked out into this like churchyard, and there were these like weird little like golem looking creatures like sort of hunched over. Like,
it sounds quite a bizarre game.
Yeah,
and I'm not gonna lie,
It goes to some places.
I think the main thing is that it's crossing the boundary of like trying to, as the player, you're trying to decipher what is reality and what isn't. And as the game progresses, like, you go from, like Emma said, the World War One trench to this like royal elegant old German mansion. And as she was progressing through the level, things start to get more and more twisted. And I can imagine it'll get more dreamlike as the game goes on. That's why I remember them telling us as well. But from what Emma played, at least, it was quite a slow burn at the start because it's more psychological horror, not survival horror like Amnesia the Bunker, which weirdly is also a World War One horror game that just came out recently.
I mean, World War One itself was a horror, so I don't know if we need to add layers of
there's extra horror in this. Yeah, it's jam-packed full. But yeah, most of it was in the house, kind of searching for stuff. More like, I think they were kind of trying to go for that like Resident Evil sort of thing. Yeah. Like, oh, you've been in this room, you've seen something, you've had a look around the house. Oh, now you've got to go back to that room and, you know, solve some puzzles.
I mean, it doesn't sound like it's one for me, if I'm honest. But, you know, maybe Chuck Fryer tuck in there and we'll get talking. But yeah, interesting. Emma, you've just been too busy. You've been so busy.
It's been a busy few weeks, you know.
It has. You've also gone and, I was going to say, had the pleasure, of watching the new Transformers film, Transformers, ooh, Rise of the Beast. And you got to speak to the director, Stephen Cable Jr. But first, like, what did you think of the film? I think, did it come out last week or this week? I think.
Yep, it was last week now, I think. What is time anymore? Like,
that's a deep. You don't have to tell me that. I don't know what day it is.
Is that the question they answer in Transformers? How deep do they go?
Well, it gets pretty deep. Like, this is the first time that we're seeing the Maximals, which are like,
thank God,
the beast robots.
Such a silly sentence to say.
But I'm not in. I've never been a Transformer. Like, I liked the first Michael Bay film, but I never was into them as a kid, so I don't have like any of like the backstory of like these different, like, you know, where they are all from and that stuff. So I don't know what the Maximals are. So please do tell me, Emma, who are the Maximals?
I will. So yeah, I'm kind of similar to you. Like, the Maximals were first introduced in like the 90s in the Beast Wars like series, which I was too small to watch. but
physically too small.
Yeah.
You just couldn't stand up to see it.
No, I couldn't. The TV was just too far and too big. But yeah, so the Maximals are like the beast robots. So you've got like Optimus Primal. He's like a gorilla. There's like a cheetah and a rhino. And there's Air Razor, who's like a bird eagle type robot.
I mean, I've just seen one of the most bizarre, I mean, she just won an Academy Award, that Michelle Yeoh is Air Razor.
Michelle Yeoh's Air Razor, Optimus Primal's Ron Perlman as well. And
Pete Davidson as Mirage.
So, okay, so I'll get to that. But Mirage was really good, basically. Like, I really like Pete Davidson's character. Cool. But yeah, so this is set like after Bumblebee.
Okay.
So it's in the 90s and it's kind of like focused on this like former soldier. He's come back to like his family. They're kind of struggling to make ends meet. And he accidentally bumps into Mirage and finds himself like wrapped into this whole adventure with another human who's like, he has like no dealings with. They come together. I'll try not to spoil it too much. But basically, they're looking for this key that all of the Transformers in the movie want to get their hands on for different reasons. So you've got like the Autobots, who we've already kind of know. So you've got like Optimus Prime, Bumblebee, and then you meet Mirage, who's new. And then you've got the Maximals, who are all like the beast ones. And then you've got all the bad Terracons. They're all trying to get hold of this thing. But yeah, so there's also like kind of two bad, big bad characters. You've got this like big planet-eating robot called Unicron.
And planet-eating robot.
Yeah, literally just goes around devouring planets, like gobbling them all up.
Okay.
And then you've got Unicron's like henchman called Scourge, who's voiced by Peter Dinklage.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, it's pretty fun. Overall, I'd say like I enjoyed the movie more than the other Transformers movies I've seen. I'm not the like a massive Transformers fan anyway. Mm-hmm. I did enjoy this more. I think it's got elements of like, there's a big focus on like family, looking after your family. It's got like kind of like an Indiana Jonesy bit, because like the key that they find is sort of like more like an archaeological like discovery. Like there's got some really like cool things in there. And yeah, it's the first time that we're seeing these beast robots and they come together with the Autobots. And that is really fun. Like, sorry, go on, Jesse.
I was going to say, is this all part, like, is the Michael Bay film still connected to any of these, or are they just separate now? Like,
These are essentially prequels.
These are prequels, yeah. So right. This is set before all of that stuff. But yeah, like I said, so it follows on from Bumblebee. And Pete Davidson's character, yeah, is the one that stands out to me, I think, because mm-hmm. You know, it's quite a serious situation that they're in.
Like, it sounds like it.
You know, there's this big planet-eating robot, and that's like a massive threat. And Pete Davidson is just Pete Davidson as mm-hmm. as an Autobot. And so he's really like fun. And he bounces off all the other characters really well. If there's like a serious situation, he brings like light to it always. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like it's a fun movie.
Not a must-see.
Maybe not a must-see, but I think, like, that's the thing. Because I don't have this, like, link to Transformers, I imagine if you did grow up with Beast Wars, you'll want to see this, because how have they brought these, like, these Maximals, which in the show, I think, transform or maximize, rather, like, every 5 minutes, right? This is, like, a sort of a different look at them, and it's sort of, I feel like, I wanted to see a little bit more of them, maybe.
More
as they
of the Transformers.
Are.
There's less Maximals.
Like more of the Maximals specifically.
Okay, you wanted maximum Maximals and you got minimum Maximals?
Yeah, it was kind of like medium Maximal.
What do you think Friar Tuck would transform into? Like an animal we're talking about. I mean, was he a bear in the Disney one?
I think so. Yeah. I think he was a bear.
Yeah.
Big bear.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That seems like that would work.
Yeah,
but yeah, like if you're interested in Transformers and you enjoy Bumblebee, I think you might enjoy this too. And yeah, if you have a link to Transformers, you'll probably pick up on way more references than I did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, there we go. Have I been making a mistake? Is Friar Tuck a priest or a monk?
Oh, you'd be a priest, right? You didn't really have like, or what's the difference between a priest and a monk?
We're not getting into this. We haven't got time. We've already
deep,
talked about this.
Deep
long
conversation.
Enough. Yeah. I mean, we could just be mistaken. I don't know. Old balding man slash bear Friar Tuck. England are rattling on in the Ashes, by the way. Great start so far. 59-1 off 11 overs as I'm looking at.
That makes sense to me.
This is meant to be my day off. I was just going to watch the Ashes all day and then go see Arctic Monkeys, and now I'm recording a podcast.
Yeah, you fucked it for yourself.
Oh, no.
Best day ever. You've got to talk about Friar Tuck.
Maximals? I have got to talk about Friar Tuck. Yeah. But that's not all Transformers, because like I said, we have got a little interview you did, Emma. Am I right in thinking if you haven't watched Rise of the Beast and you care about spoilers, maybe you shouldn't listen to this?
Definitely. Like, if you don't want to know about any spoilers, like, just don't listen to that part of the interview. The interview's with the director, Stephen Caple Jr.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And it's about 8 minutes, I believe. So if you don't want any Transformers, skip ahead about 8 minutes. And we'll be getting into some of your feedback. So, without further ado, here's a little interview.
What is, like, your personal attachment to Beast Wars?
Watching it as a kid, realizing that they were trying to do something different with visual effects and probably not even liking it as a kid in terms of the visual effects. And I just remember talking about it to other kids at school, like, every time we had a chance. Like, that's, like, the deepest thing I remember about Beast Wars as a child. But the storyline was really cool. And, yeah, I was just a fan of all the characters growing up. So for me to have the opportunity to, like, bring them into live action was really cool. And, you know, it reminds me of my childhood.
That's lovely. Were there, like, any specific, like, episodes or, like, a storyline that, like, you really resonated with you and, like, sort of made you want to make this?
There's a few. I don't want to spoil it for anybody. There's a few characters that die in the series. And I remember as a child being like, wow, you don't really kill off too many, like, characters, and especially in cartoons, if you will.
Yeah.
So, like, that stood out to me. And I won't say the names because I think everyone should watch all the Beast Wars episodes. That stood out to me. And just the mythology, I remember big time, like, in terms of them coming to Earth and Earth wasn't formed yet. I thought that was pretty cool, you know, for prehistoric times. I don't think I've seen that when I was a child.
Sweet. And, like, why did you think now was the right time to bring, like, this storyline in?
I think it's probably because we're at movie number 7 and we're like, all right, what can we do differently? What would bring life to these other characters as well and add to their journey? And it feels like bringing in the Maximals, these beastly characters who are just as powerful, have interesting personalities and a whole nine, just felt like the right time, you know, in 2023, especially coming after Bumblebee. So I don't think there was an intention after Bumblebee to make Beast Wars at first. But it felt like since it was in the 80s, Bumblebees, and we were stepping into the 90s, it was also like, oh, this might be the perfect era because Beast Wars was actually out in the 90s and there's some cool things we could play with. And, like, the lack of technology we had in the 90s allowed us to have characters like Beast Wars because no one had cell phones and able to record these beings all around, which you can do now. It just felt like the perfect blend.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. And, like, you mentioned, like, sort of changing some stuff. What stuff did you want to change from the original, like, source material?
It was the source material in the script that I received. Some of the things I changed, Unicron wasn't in the original, so it was nice to bring in the original script. So it was nice to bring in Unicron. The exosuit was never there. And the Maximals never, in the cartoons, the Maximals never interacted with humans, you know, which I thought was pretty different. And I was like, oh, how would that play in our film now that we are so human-based and talking to, like, characters like Anthony and Dominique Fishback, Elena, Noah. So those things where we kind of broke from the actual cartoon world as well, which I wanted to play with in this film.
That's great. Like, you mentioned the exosuit as well. Like, that is really cool. Like, where did you get your, like, inspiration for adding that?
Definitely the 1986 animated film. Daniel and the Witwickies in the film, they had exosuits, and I just thought it was super cool when I first saw it. Now to be able to do that now in 2023 and turn a human into a Transformer just felt like the next step, especially with the humans, because we always watch these movies and go, what can they add to the fight? What can they add to the battle? And in our film, I really wanted that theme to All Are One to sing. And so in order for that to happen, I wanted them to work together. So in order for them to work together, I just didn't want them running around sort of like not doing anything in the fight. I wanted Noah to really participate and help Prime take on the bad guys. And he needed some kind of armor. He needed some kind of weapon. And that's when the exosuit came about.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you. I'd also like to talk about the, like, there's a massive tease right at the end of the movie.
Oh, I heard about
a big crossover. What can you tell me about that?
I'm a fan of that franchise as well. I think there's a ton of characters that haven't been explored yet with that certain franchise. And I feel like it's just a natural blend. You know, there was a graphic novel, a few actually, that was based off of this crossover. And I always thought it was kind of cool that Hasbro was doing that back in the day. I can't tell you too much, but I'm excited about where it can go. I feel like it created more of a endless possibilities, if you will, with the direction we can go with the franchise and places we can go with the franchise that we haven't been before. So
that's awesome. I'm interested. I don't know if you can answer this. I'm gonna ask it anyway. Mm-hmm. Is this like sort of the point in the timeline where G.I. Joe as an organization is sort of getting together, like, you know, getting established,
forming together? Oh, I can't even tell you the answer to that. I can't even do it. But I will say, I feel like, yes, it's one of the earlier stages of the Joes for me. So I don't think it needs to align with any of the movies later as well. So I think it'll be its own sort of thing, a rebranding of it, if you will.
Okay. And will it connect the dots, do you think, with Snake Eyes? Is it still going to carry on?
The film Snake Eyes?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be its own thing overall. Yeah. Especially with this one in a direction with the Autobots. I feel like there's also new characters I want to explore that haven't been like beyond Snake Eyes and things like that haven't been fully utilized. There's like this cartoon that I love in series that I love called The Renegades, which I thought was really cool, the G.I. Joe Renegades. A little bit grittier than the classic G.I. Joes, but had some of the characters that you love as well. So I may be pulling inspiration from that.
Fair enough. You mentioned like obviously we're on the topic of crossovers here. Mm-hmm. Like we've seen Transformers in the past also have crossovers with like Ghostbusters and mm-hmm. like Star Trek and stuff like that. Like, is this the beginning of like a Hasbro verse? Like,
it could be. I like the sound of that, yeah, for sure.
Is there any like crossover you would like to see, like
besides the one I'm trying to do right now? Just the one that I'm doing right now. I think is probably the biggest one I'm excited about the most. I haven't thought about any other like franchises and what crossovers could look like. But this one felt pretty natural and easy for me to say, okay, this is the next step and where we can go. But maybe there's some more properties, we'll see.
Sweet. And yeah. Like with G.I. Joe specifically, and I guess Transformers as well, mm-hmm. are there any specific stories that sort of were in your mind and influenced you to sort of make this cinematic universe and expand it?
Probably the 1986 animated film. And there's a lot of, I don't know if anyone watched like the Japanese cartoons with Transformers. They expanded the world way much more than we have in the past here. Meaning like there's different planets, there's different factions that we just haven't seen before of actual Transformers. And so I feel like this movie, those things inspired Unicron, but also inspired the fact that there's more than just the Autobots and Decepticons. Because every film we've been kind of just going Autobots, Decepticons. Whereas now we have the Terracons. There's Predacons, and there's actually much more out there. So we're kind of wearing insignia today, and it's like I want everybody to kind of rep their favorite sort of faction if they would. So by the end of this, if we can introduce more, that would be great and my goal for sure.
Yeah, that's really cool. Like mm-hmm. my last question about the Maximals is that we don't actually see them maximize in mm-hmm. this movie. Like what sort of influenced your decision with that?
We see them maximize once. I wanted to save it for the ending battle. When they're about to actually fight. So I didn't want them to turn into robot form too soon. So I saved it for that moment. Just because it felt like I didn't want them all to look the same throughout, you know, especially with Optimus Primal and him being named closer to Prime. His look could be almost damn near close to Prime's as well. So I felt like just switching it up and making sure that we save that one moment for when they're actually about to fight and take on the bad guys.
Lovely. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, thank sure. you so much for your time.
No, thank you.
Wow, Emma, what an interview. Oh,
that
God.
Friar Tuck cameo was so mad.
I know, I can't believe he tucked in into that as well. Wow, he's everywhere. Incredible. Let's get some of your feedback. Feedback at IGN. Oh, no, IGN underscore UK feedback.
Oh, fake fan.
IGN.com. I've only said that about 1,000 times in my life now. Jesse, I believe you have the first piece.
I certainly
feedback
do.
That was emailed to us. Oh,
you need to relax.
I'm losing. I need to sleep.
Oh. Well, this is from James Bradley, and he says, "Hi guys. Firstly, welcome Wes, a great addition to a great bunch."
I would agree.
Yeah, yes.
I listened to Wes the podcast lovely. On my flight home, and it didn't make me fall asleep. So that was good.
What a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, that's great.
I enjoyed it.
Well, James goes on to say, "You guys mentioned hardware and hackers, and that made my mind shoot back to a physical hack I did on PS2's drive-in masterpiece, Gran Turismo 3, A-Spec. Good it was game. My first video game grind, race after race to modify my garage to a fleet of unstoppable beasts. Then it dawned on me, if I got a 20-lap lead against those peasant bot cars with an F1 car on an oval track endurance race, I could simply sellotape, accelerate down, and let the car bump its way to victory. Easy cash while I literally slept."
You know you're enjoying your games if you literally just let someone else play it for you. That's no when you've reached the optimal prime. Jesus,
the optimal prime is maximal.
Time in a game.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right, carry on.
He goes on to say, "My question is, have any of you guys found a way to cheese a game that wasn't a conventional cheat? Also, did you ever try those entertaining cheats? For example, mad pedestrians with rockets in GTA. Great times."
I'm sure you have many of these, Jesse, because you like to hack and get and, you know, cheat your way through most things in life. I was having this conversation last week with someone. I can't remember who it was, so I apologize. Maybe it was Max. I don't know. It was someone. About how every game should have, like, why do games not have cheats anymore, like fun cheats? Like, every game, in my opinion, should have big head mode. Every single game should have big head mode. I don't care what game it is. I was about to say something that could have been clipped out. Give me heads that are big.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, there we go.
I think to answer James's question, when I had a copy of San Andreas as a kid, my favorite challenge was once I unlocked the entire map and had like a completed save and all sorts, I would activate the mad pedestrian cheat, the mad traffic cheat, and also the cheat that gives pedestrians weapons. And then I would run all the way with no vehicles from one end to the map to the other to see how long I could survive for, because you're constantly getting attacked and like cars are trying to bump into you and there's tanks everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a nice little...
Could you fight back or you just ran?
It depends. I created little stories and little characters sometimes. Sometimes I'd be like a soldier and I'd spawn at like the military base and I have to get here. So I'd have like a few weapons with me and stuff. Sometimes I'd be like a little taxi driver and I need to get by. It was pretty fun, to be fair. But
yeah,
can't really replicate that fun unless, I don't know, you're modding a copy of GTA 5 to fucking do something mad. Because like you said, you don't really get those cheats anymore.
Yeah. I don't think I ever had any like physical hacks, like using a rubber band to hold in the control and stuff like that. Mm. I don't think I've ever had. Like, definitely, there was, in talking of Gran Turismo, there was definitely those 24-hour races that if you simulate, you could put in 3x speed, so there'd be like 8 hours.
That's good.
I definitely came second in those a lot of times, and it was just like, just incredibly infuriated. I had like 99.7% on one save, and I was just like, that's just this one 24-hour race, and I wasn't going to play it, was I? Who wants to play a 24-hour race? What are they thinking? But there we go. Emma, have you ever cheated in a game?
I'm trying to think if I have, and I don't think I have. I'm very much like...
I think you're too honest.
I'm very behaved, very sensible, you know?
I'll
grind through it. I'll stick there. I mean, I don't think I'd do a 24-hour race. That would be... Too much, I think.
It's not fun. Yeah. But yeah. Fair enough. If you've done the hardware hacks so to speak, like, I don't know, I'm just trying to think of something. Using 4 paperclips and a froob to unlock something in a game. I don't know.
Brilliant.
Let us know. I could do with a frozen froob now.
Oh, frozen froobs are so good.
I don't think I've ever had a froob.
Really? Oh, never, not even like in your lunchbox or...
No, I've never had a froob.
Oh,
mate, freeze
Jesse.
A froob and you'll have a lovely
do they color. Still exist?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think so. I had some recently. They're still good.
You can get a pack of 9 for £2.25 at Tesco.
That's a bargain. Freeze those and you've got 9 delicious frozen treats there.
Great.
That's a recommendation for everyone. Freeze your froobs. Do it. I sound drunk. I'm not. Yeah, but there we go. Freeze your frubes, everyone. I've got an email.
What's coming up next?
I've got an email from Scott Zeal who says, "Hey all, love the show as always. Hope you're all well." Getting through, Scott. I'm getting through, but thank you. On the feedback from last week asking about the weirdest toppings on a pizza, I think I've found the god of all pizzas. During lockdown, when things were sort of half open and you could order food to collect, one of the few places that took order when I was staying with family in the countryside was an Italian restaurant which offered a spaghetti bolognese pizza.
Why?
I'm a big fan. It sounds great. I mean, I love spaghetti bolognese. I'm a big fan. This is Scott again now. This isn't me. I'm a big fan of the old spag bol, so I was immediately drawn to it. But when I tell you I've never eaten something so good, my God. This was unbelievable. I don't think this bit needed explaining, Scott, but thank you for doing it. They essentially cooked a spaghetti bolognese, whacked it on top of an uncooked pizza, then cut them together for a little longer. I was having them weekly until I then moved back to London as things began to open up. It's been many years now since I last tasted heaven. And despite numerous times of trying to recreate it at home, it's never been the same. And I feel like there will always be this pizza-shaped hole in my heart. I mean, what do we think about that? There's a little bit more to this email, but what do we think about the spaghetti bolognese pizza? Have you ever made a spaghetti bolognese sandwich? I've done that.
Yes, many times, to be fair. That slaps.
Hang on, a lasagna sandwich. Why did you do this?
I think why because, like... You? If you know how to make a really good, like, rich bolognese, like, I was going to say ragu. Spell for some reason. I don't know why that came to mind. But a really nice bolognese, and it goes very well in a sandwich as well.
So, yeah, yeah. But not the pasta, just the sauce and the
sometimes
meat.
The pasta's involved as well. No, it depends if you want to finish the pasta off.
Like, I ask you this question. What meal is not made better by putting it in between two bits of bread?
I mean, it's the carbs... on carbs, right?
But you'd have some problem. Garlic bread with the pizza, with the pasta, wouldn't you?
I guess, but you have that.
I don't think I've ever had garlic bread and pasta.
Yeah, right? But why don't you get two bits of garlic bread and put the bolognese in between it?
I mean, that sounds awesome.
I don't
awesome.
Do that, to be fair. Yeah, but you can scoop it up, though, at the end.
That sounds delicious. I'm just hungry now.
Yeah, garlic bread is maybe my favourite food. I love garlic bread.
Really? Point. Of all the food
I
in
love
the world?
Garlic bread. Just good garlic bread.
My local Iceland closed down like not too long ago, so my like
you can find better garlic bread than that though.
Yeah, but it was the closest garlic bread, and it was easy garlic bread.
Yeah,
so
the closest garlic bread is always the best garlic bread.
There we go.
IGN _ at IGN.com. As long as you've best or worst pizza toppings. What's the weird? I was just gonna say, what's the weirdest thing you made a sandwich? We literally did a whole special on that too.
Yeah,
literally running out of ideas on the spot.
Let's just bring it back again.
More pizza stories are welcome though, because there is an end to Scott's email here that says bonus pizza. When I was in Croatia many years ago, I asked for a margarita pizza with a hot dog topping, assuming they'd know what I meant. Sadly, they didn't. Photo attached. So I'm going to explain this quite
can this
sad
be the, can
image.
This be the thumbnail?
To the I think that could be arranged actually.
Yeah.
Why attract people if it was Starfield when we could have this? I think a lot of people maybe when they imagine a hot dog pizza, maybe you'd slice the hot dog up into like small slices and then
yes.
just like put those across the like dash them across the pizza like you would like a pepperoni or something. No, this pizza is literally it's a round pizza, but then just one hot dog placed through the diameter. Of the circle.
It's not even in the middle.
Yeah, I was going to say it's not centered at all.
So you'd probably have this on what, three or four of the slices? Let's say you cut it into eight, you'd have it on maybe four of them.
It looks like a nice hot dog, nice sausage though. I mean, it looks like...
The pizza itself looks like it could be
actually,
a nice pizza.
The more that I look at it now, the left side of the sausage looks like a fingernail to me now. It looks like a long finger. I don't know.
Oh, it kind of does, yeah.
Yeah, you can see the fingernail like on the left. It looks less appealing to me now, to be fair.
The only way you'll find a picture of this pizza is if you search for the podcast on IGN.com, because that's literally the only place this... this image will go.
This
or
is
maybe
exclusive
we'll
content.
Yeah, who knows? Give us those page clicks for the sausage pizza. It's like we don't want people to listen to this podcast. Like 15 to 20,000 people do weekly, but
that is an insane number.
Yeah, when you think about we're putting pictures of a hot dog pizza on the thumbnail as opposed to maybe saying our Starfield thoughts, which but people might be interested
in. I feel like everyone will just sort of like be like, oh, Starfield, maybe I'm not in the mood. But if they see dodgy finger sausage pizza, they'll be like, I want to have a look at that.
Yep. Brilliant. Emma, last piece of feedback. Let's get this done.
This feedback's from CJ in Nebraska. CJ says, lovely. Hello all. Hope everyone is well, especially the newest member of the podcast, Canon Wesley. The presumably joking conversation about Wes losing his job if he doesn't like the prestige made me wonder, have you ever made a snap judgment of someone who you just met based on a movie they either liked or didn't like? Obviously,
all the time, but I don't, I don't actually say it. I give them a chance. But,
do the eyebrow like lift? Like, oh.
Well, maybe
he'll make
in
a comment.
Head.
You'll make a comment.
I'll let them know. Anyway, carry on, sorry.
Obviously, everyone can like or dislike whatever, and it's very reductive to judge someone based on movie taste, but have you done it? And CJ says, I remember being in college, and someone I just met said, I get how someone could not understand the movie Garden State, but not how someone could not like it. Which immediately made me assume I did not see the world the same way as this person. In this case, I was correct. Has anything similar ever happened to you? As always, thank you for all the many hours of joy you'll provide, and respect the sea. Thank you, CJ.
There is like some, like you said, everything's subjective. Like, you know, The Godfather is maybe probably my favorite film. I can get if someone goes, I don't know, I don't like it. I don't quite understand it, but I know some people might think maybe it's a bit slow. It's not. It's perfect.
I can't remember if, like, Joe Scrabs dislikes the Lord of the Rings trilogy films.
Oh,
think,
he does.
Yeah, I think he finds them very, very boring.
Yeah.
I think I remember saying, like, you know, fucking Fellowship of the Ring was one of my favorite films, and Joe's like... face turning in disgust, and I was like, oh man, but you know what, I still like Joe, so it's all good.
There are some like films to me that it's just like you never hear someone say they don't like, so it's really weird when you hear it. So like, have you ever met someone who doesn't like Jurassic Park? If they say they don't like it, it's very weird.
Yeah, I've never heard that personally.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
If someone went, I think Jurassic Park's boring, you would probably...
If it was any of the films after the first one, I'd be like, fair enough.
Oh, yeah. But I'm told, like, Jurassic Park... I have met people that don't think Jaws is very good. Again,
I have no memories of it. And I feel like I've watched it once. Like, as a kid.
You need to
I probably need to rewatch it.
There's a shark in it.
wow.
Another one for me is, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark. If you're not finding any joy in Raiders of the Lost Ark, then I don't know, frankly, what you want in life.
That's interesting you bring that up, actually. We were talking to Dale this week about Indiana Jones. I don't think he dislikes it necessarily. I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but I don't think he loves it as much as like a lot of people enjoy
it. That's fine.
Like,
as long as he likes it, that's fine. If he was like, I hate Raiders of the Lost Ark, then
I don't think it was hate.
With you. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it wasn't hate.
But no, most of the time, pretty fine. Like, I may joke like, what are you talking about? If someone says, like, you know, I can understand why someone wouldn't like There Will Be Blood. I can fully understand why you wouldn't like it.
I was forced to watch it in the worst circumstances.
I sat next to you on a plane.
You stared at me for hours and you're like, you have to watch this, Jesse.
You clicked to watch it like 10 minutes into the flight. What are you talking about? I'm sure there's plenty of films out there that, you know, I hate that people like.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever called someone out for it. Like, how do you not love that? Like,
yeah. Eh, who knows? Anyway, IGN_UK feedback at IGN.com for weird pizza toppings. What would Fryer Tuck transform into?
What's your favourite Maximal pizza topping?
What transformer would you want in a stuffed crust? I don't know. Should we just end this? What music should we have? I mean, all the Starfield music's pretty damn good.
It's really good.
Much of that.
Yeah. It's so relaxing as well. I feel like that's a good way to get into the weekend.
I can't wait for that.
Or Fryer Tuck's theme. I'm sure that exists somewhere. I don't know what that would be.
I'm sorry, Jesse. It's Starfield.
Damn it.
Yeah. Good. All right. See you later. Goodbye.
Bye.
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 Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.